Therefore, please come to stand first. And if you're actually have a really soft mat, I mean, you know what? Just kind of throw your mat, double it over, so you can everybody can stand on the wood. I think that will be preferable. And this will be an experiment. This will be an experiment in finding out whether a reference movement that literally could be said to have nothing to do with the lesson makes a difference. The lesson still makes a difference, okay? So, as you are standing, find out what would, how would you shift your weight onto your heel so that you could bring the front of the foot off the floor and probably, and not fall.
Both feet.
So how do you, so you lift the 2 feet and really flex at the ankle, right? So the toes don't need to do, the toes actually can be really, if possible, they can be really continuing to snooze. Okay? And if you need to hold on to somebody a little bit next to you, then go ahead, right? Normally, just make sure they know what purpose they're serving, right? And then, so the first thing is to find out that you can, right? And then as you go on, do it a number of times, do it a number of times. And how would you describe to yourself? So that means you don't have to name parts. You go, oh, kind of here I do this and here that and like that, okay? So somewhere you go backward and somewhere you go forward. And whether you need to hold your breath or not really shows you whether you're really comfortable with the strategy, right? So what will show up whether it's really easy or not, right? What, the breath doesn't lie. It's like the ultimate honest member of our psyche. So if you feel that you're holding your chest, or the other thing people do, of course, is the hold on to air, which is always a great strategy. I've used it myself. And or you don't quite make a grasping motion, but you do kind of, you know, like somehow the hands cup as if they're ready, right? Okay, so I can just check those two. And then just stand for a moment. So you're... And I went right for the 2 because it shows up right away. Good. Now, lastly, what I'd like you to do is describe to yourself, how do you... What are the images or where inside yourself you listen to the pelvis and the legs? Because really hip joints are just the meeting of the pelvis at a particular point called the, normally called the hip joints or the acetabula, and the legs. So in other words, where in your pelvis, where into your pelvis can you place your attention and feel like you're actually someplace rather than kind of more or less? And we'll see whether any of this is different after the ATM. Okay, good. Leave it all and lie on your back. Oh, but you can unfold your mat if you so you can lie on your whole mat. Yeah, you might be more comfortable. Either way, just, you know, flat surface and all, and maybe a cool floor would be appreciated. But and as you have been guided and you have guided people about listening to themselves before an ATM, I'm not going to offer any suggestions for this part. You do a scan that you would like to do. So, of course, the person teaching the ATM knows what ATM it is, and therefore would or could tailors the scan to the ATM. But as you don't know what ATM it is, you just tailor it to, I don't know, to what? How do you? Whatever it is, it'll be something that's interesting to you or even important that either you seek out or it's so insistent. Right, there are sensations that are so insistent that even if you try not to notice them, you can't. And there are habits of how we listen to ourselves that are so insistent that it takes somebody else suggesting something to listen to ourselves differently. So just see what happens. And then would you please bend your knees so the 2 feet are standing. And something again which you have taught probably endless number of times, would you place your right hand behind your head, bring your right knee towards your chest, put your left hand below the right kneecap, and bring your right elbow a little bit forward away from the floor. And again, so it's the right knee and the right elbow. So the right leg is towards the chest, right? Right knee and right elbow will be being brought towards each other. And of course, away from each other. And again, nothing will be offered about what to pay attention to. The left knee can be bent, so the left foot is standing, so you don't have to have the challenge of the left leg being long. So you direct yourself. And when you direct yourself, are you giving yourself attention questions based on, how could I put it, thinking, or are you actually adjusting also your questions to what you're sensing? So the left knee is bent, the left leg, don't keep the left leg long, it's just, yeah, that's right, so the left foot is standing, so your pelvis is more available. So according to, do you adjust your, we adjust our action, right? We adjust how far we go or the exact angle of the elbow and the knee. But how do you adjust? And then keep your right hand behind your head and just change your legs. So now it's going to be the right elbow and the left knee. The right elbow and the left knee. But so what are there any sensorial questions that you ask yourself, things that you notice in your sensation, that then direct your action? And what are they? They could have to do with the amount of effort. Probably I'm just listing a few that people generally use, reducing effort. They could have to do with finding the support through parts of your trunk, the back of your trunk, as you lift your head and bring your knee to your chest. Could have something to do with breath, when you exhale, when you inhale, right? Okay, and then leave that, and just rest a moment and see how you feel.
And just continue to lie like this with your legs long, right? If you need something behind your head, I usually tell people, if you would have something behind your head for an FI, feel free to take it for an ATM, like this, that you're lying on the back. And begin to listen to the lower belly below the umbilicus, below the belly button, somewhere just above or at the pubic bone, and a little bit maybe wider, kind of in the direction of the groin. So somewhere the very lower part of the belly. And if you hang out there for a while, you might notice that there's some part of that area that as the breath starts coming in, it maybe rises a little bit, or rises would mean a forward direction, right? But it doesn't just rise. It might be the easiest to notice. There could be, if you, this is a moment of not making it happen, but hanging out in an area and finding out what happens and if what's described actually happens. So more of an expansion, albeit small, in all directions. So a little balloon that would go, but not because you're inflating it, but just because it does by itself go a little forward, a little sideways, a little maybe backward, downward. And some of those directions may be clearer, more present, or at least less unclear than others. And it's as if when the air starts coming in through your nostrils, that in spite of the fact that the lungs are found in your thorax, that this is the area that shows movement first. And then from there it may subside again and be an extremely short breath, or at other times it may actually expand and upward and maybe even backward into the small ribs above the waist. It may change, it probably will change as you go on. So, you know, already there's the listening for something extraordinarily specific and yet having the wide attention that is present but not demanding. Something must happen here. Well, something might happen in the chest or in the ribs. And you want to hang out mostly in the foreground, in the whole foreground, in this lower belly and everything else. It's like your background appears more clearly, but it is the background of the rest of yourself. And somewhere deep inside that belly, somewhere deep inside the lower part of the belly, will be the coccyx, right? Will be the tailbone, which may or may not be touching the floor, but some part of the sacrum is. So begin to follow upward along the line, the midline that has something to do with your spine, upward. The points of contact, like the sacrum, points of no contact, but somewhere in the lower back vertebra, until you find with what distinctions of attention, right? Sometimes attention will really jump some inches. So if it does, or if you jump it, it jumps you, you jump it, go back and see if you can. It doesn't really matter if you're really relating to the vertebral segments. What's curious is the if it has to jump or flow upward. So you're kind of establishing a line, if you'd like, but it's really a line of attention. It's a line of listening through the vertebra that have ribs attached to them. Again, places where you might jump. And just notice whether the places that your attention jumps are also places that are, there's little sensation there, or the sensation is unpleasant. Up through between the shoulder blades to the base of your neck, which might be first thoracic, second C7. That's all. That's good enough. And neck and the line of attention might include your head in some way so that you're not a headless spine. And then just go over in at various speeds, if you'd like, this line, which might have a visual component to it. You might be painting, you might be, I don't know what you're imagining, but it's funny, it's like it's not a static line, it's not a fixed line, it's a line that you go over with your attention and it has a direction. Moshe always in these ATMs starts from the bottom of the spine and goes upward. So there's already something of direction that later has to do with support, right? Support that's being proposed. And just notice whether when, as you've been establishing that line of attention, whether the listening to the lower belly has moved into the background, disappeared, or stayed in the foreground. And see if you can actually bring the listening to the belly to the foreground, as though that is your primary, I will not divert my attention from here. And the line of attention upward through the spine is secondary. I don't know. I'm not sure how we do that, but it is possible to find a way of shifting these sort of foreground, background attentionally. And the next time that you are that you arrive at the top of this line of your midline, come forward into your face and kind of in thought, so it's not really doing anything, it's in thought, allow your mouth to, first of all, the lips to soften, maybe unstick from each other. You could kind of moisten your lips so they don't, the tissue just doesn't stick. And you prepare your mouth to be ready to smile should occasion to smile arise. And you prepare your jaw as if it would come forward a little bit. You don't do it, but you prepare it. Maybe it would go down and forward, or and then in your around the eyes, so the sphincters around the eyes, you imagine that there's a widening even, or a kind of a melting of the skin or the musculature backward towards the ears, forehead as well. Good. And were you able to maintain the attention to the lower belly in all the, either the forward direction or more directions, including maybe even downward? It's downward of the lower belly. What are the bony landmarks into which that movement could expand? And then from the base of your neck, whatever vertebra that is, some big vertebra there, you imagine a line that goes from that vertebra wide to one in the direction of one shoulder, whichever one you'd wish, and then down along that arm to the elbow, from the elbow to the wrist, and of course wrist to the fingers. And go over that line of attention and relate it. See, when we go slowly, we're like relating the progress of attention to very particular experience of ourselves. You could call it parts, but we don't have parts without, or at least we try to have experience of the parts, right? Different tempos, different speeds, but it's a directionality in one of the five line ATMs. Moshe actually has you imagine a hose like a water hose through which water moves, so that it's a direction, not a picture. And then from same place there at the base of the neck, in the other, towards the other shoulder, which means you've got to go from the spine to some ribs first, some tissues, until you hit some inner edge of the shoulder blade, and then you somehow travel along some part of the shoulder blade down to the shoulder joint, and from there to the arm. And those lines would not be straight. Most people have their arms downward, but it doesn't matter. Lines can bend. And the breath being the foreground, the lines of attention And then you have the length of attention along the spine, along the two arms, the width of your face. And somewhere behind this breathing, right, behind the forward part of the breathing, or even the sideways, there are the sacrum lies. The sacrum is, of course, that which is part of spine and part of pelvis. So from wherever you think the sacrum meets one of the ilia, one of the sides of the pelvis, draw a line of attention from there through into a hip joint and then down that particular leg, so that the leg is also starting from the spine rather than just from the hip joint. And from the other area that would be, where is it in relation to the hip joints? Sometimes a little peculiar to locate the hip joints, let alone the sacroiliac joint, from the front, from inside your belly, downward through to the other heel. And of course, you may find that your attention without action, right, there's attention in action and then there's attention without action, might be as pleased and I just tickled pink, or you might just going crazy. So, okay. So you have now primarily the listening to the breath, secondarily these five directions which may fade in and out, and could be curious whether how many of those directions it's possible to generate or maintain. Do we maintain or do we generate again? I think we generate. And in as much as you can, maintain breath primarily and then secondarily the five directions, you begin to bend your knees so your feet are standing, but it's as if you're trying to find out whether you can bend your knees without disturbing your attention to the breath, without disturbing the breath. In other words, the movement is completely, it's as if you're trying to create more difficult conditions under which to maintain the listening to the deep belly expanding and letting itself deflate, and the five directions as you're, something's trying to distract you from that vow that you took to listen to the belly, to be in the belly. And you find out, because you have to deepen the listening in order to not have the movement become primary. And when you have bent your knees and your feet are standing, and you notice, we'll be doing this a number of times, so you find where the movement springs into trying to be the most important, and maybe that will shift by itself at some point, right? You don't have to get it right away. And stay with your knees bent. And can you bring your left hand behind your head? But of course you can. Of course you can't. I don't think there's anybody here who can't. So just notice how quick we are to do the movement that sets us up for the actual ATM. Believe me, happens to me too. So it's much easier being up here and laughing than down there and laughing. But anyway, so the breath is your primary. The breath, and then especially this, that line of attention that goes from the base of your neck through, wide through the left shoulder into the arm. But the spine, you listen whether you can stay long through the spine as you bring your left hand behind your head. And then it can stay behind your head. And without disturbing your listening to your breath, and as much as you can without disturbing the breath, two different things. And the length of the spine, and the, oh, by the way, what happened to the lines of the legs? They bent, but can they go from the sacrum to the hip joints, from the hip joints to the knee, from the knee to the heels? And without shortening the lines, can you bring the left knee towards your chest and the right arm, so that the hand, but the right arm from the base of the neck, doing something distal but keeping attention really proximal. And not only proximal, but connected to the distance between the proximal and the distal. And then, of course, you begin to lift your head, bring the left elbow towards the left knee, but maintaining primarily attention to the whole lower belly, expanding, deflating, not just in the lifting, but also in the bringing your head back to the floor. And just notice, at any moment, do any of the lines shorten? And if they do, that's just what they do, but what do? You don't stretch, you don't lengthen anything other than you know, it's like you manifest things. You got to manifest width and length and the lips ready to smile and the eyes softening backward, and here you go. And interestingly enough, the speed with which everybody is moving is so much more consistent between this large group of people than at the very beginning. So, and I haven't said anything about that. It's somehow taking this kind of attention takes, can't move in the beginning faster. Good. All right. And then have a short pause. You can stay with your knees bent if you'd like. Just bring your head back. And it's pause rather than rest, because it's pause the movement so that you can use the stillness to listen to the breath, to regenerate and recreate the lines of attention which might have a visual representation for you, might not. But the lines of the width of the arms starting from the spine and the length of the legs starting from the sacrum. And then place your, with the same attention, right? With the same attention, you'll eventually have your right hand behind your head and your left leg still bent. So you arrange whatever goes first, what does simultaneously.
And once you actually have your right hand behind your head and your left hand below your knee, before you even start moving, see if any of the listening to the lower belly or the breathing in the lower belly has changed by movement, whether you wanted it to or not, and whether the lines have faded. And so re-establish that. That's your primary. It's not as though we're using breath to facilitate movement. Right? We do that, but we're using breath to refine, deeply, profoundly refine quality of the movement, of the listening to oneself, the movement, of the ability to stay really global with your attention, and eventually to stay more and more simultaneous with attention in multiple directions. Right? Moshe would say, and then you can leave your right hand behind your head and change legs so that it's your right leg and right elbow. But just notice the moment when the movement all of a sudden springs and tries to be more important than the listening. So if good posture is the ability to move in any direction without preparation, it requires that attention can move in any direction, and in fact in all directions. Something about when attention can move in many, many directions, that the ability to move in any of those directions is really can be developed. Yeah, and then you can at any point, because you know we'll come back to it. The movement is just here to almost see if you can resist the distraction that the movement offers. Can you not be distracted by the movement? You can rest, but when you bring yourself back to the floor, just see if you can do that while listening to the breath in the belly and the lines upward from the coccyx. So over and over in this ATM, he actually very explicitly guides attention. So when you're resting, again, to the belly, to the line from the coccyx upward. Notice if attention flows more along that direction without jumping. And the face spreading, and words speak sequentially, but attention can and needs to be simultaneous. So, and from the base of the neck, the width through, perhaps you can now go in both directions from the spine, left and right. Yeah, so much, for many of us, our attention is accompanied by looking. So if you pay attention from the spine upward, it's like your eyes go from the coccyx upward. So that becomes problematic when it's multi-directional. Hard to have your eyes looking left and right simultaneously. And from behind the belly, downward, or downward and upward at the same time. But it's a fascinating thing there from the sacrum. The line that moves upward through the spine, but downward to the heels. So that capacity to move downward and upward, which is how forces move through us anyway, gravity, ground forces, but with our own attention, what really makes it possible, or maybe even is necessary to reorganize the power of a pelvis that lets the legs be free, that catches support, all of that. Just, you know, I'm talking a lot, so ignore me if you want, it doesn't matter. And did this way of working bring about more significant change than what you did at the beginning before attending to your breath and the five lines? It's crafty what he does. Lets you do what you want to do, and he goes, how about doing it this way, folks? So to the degree that you're able, and maybe that degree is greater or lesser, maybe you're more in yourself, more distracted, I don't know, it's a process, right? It's a long process, all this stuff. Again, bend your knees, but there really is no hurry, you know, no hurry. So we'll take the time. And just the breath, remember that the breath, the listening in the belly, and allowing that belly to not get constricted by moving your legs. Right, so the attention, if your attention is okay, yeah, that's fine. Then you can also do the movement. But if the attention isn't well infused into the image and well infused, well planted into yourself, the movement will just whip you out even more. And then just with the legs bent, the width of the shoulders, and the width of the mouth, so maybe the widths are beginning to connect to each other. There's the part that's width, the mouth, the shoulders, the length from the of the spine, and very schematic but connected to you. And the length of the legs, the lengths which are bent. And again, continue with the breath, and bring your left hand very slowly without disturbing. And if you disturb, where? What happens? Which part of the line of attention from the spine disappears? Is it the part from the spine to the shoulder joint? So wherever, from wherever your attention disappears, you need to be there even more, right? And place that left hand behind your head. And again, now the left knee will... the left foot will lift from the floor. So establish your attention, right? Establish your attention in such a way that the length of the spine can be there, the breath can be there. You know, maybe you have to make choices. Maybe you can't be everywhere, but you make the choice. You can give attention to two lines. You choose which are the two. And then when the movement is done, then you can maybe expand the attention. And of course, yes, the right hand will touch below the left kneecap. And without actually, so you hold like that, you're behind your head, you're holding below the kneecap, the left hand stays behind your head. You can bring the elbow a little bit forward away from the floor, and just in thinking, without any movement, imagine if the elbow and the knee were to touch, where exactly would the elbow touch the knee? Where in the knee would you feel it? And you can change it, of course. You can decide where. So both legs are bent. I think it is easier. Both knees are bent. So you're still imagining, right? You're still imagining. And then where in the elbow would you sense the touching?
And can you, so maybe once you could sense where in the elbow, where in the knee, could you imagine the both? Can you imagine both sensations simultaneously, that you sense the elbow and the knee? And none of it, he says, is important if you've lost the breath, if you've lost the lengths, none of it is important. And on the condition that you'll listen to the breath and the lengths, you can bring the elbow and the knee towards each other. And it might be that having such a specific imagined, hallucinated, if you will, sense of contact actually made it so that you either feel lighter or you in fact get closer, or for some people I see there's even they even touch. So where, says he, was the inability? Was it in the tissues? Was it in the image? And when your left foot or left knee moves away from the chest, you can let the knee go so that your left foot can come back to the floor, and just find whether you can keep your left hand behind your head. Keep your left hand behind your head. And just change legs. See, my words of instructions are very fast, but you don't have to do it that fast. You do it according to your listening to your breath. It's just, my words are just an image. And again, you imagine before you lift, you imagine where in the elbow will touch the right knee, or where it would if it could. Exactly and precisely. And where the knee would touch the elbow, how would the elbow sense that? Will it be a soft touch, or will they have a bit of a collision? So it's now the right knee. Well, sometimes, you know, when you becomes easier, all of a sudden there's a bit of a collision because you didn't think it was going to be that easy. And provided that you can continue to listen to the breath primarily, to the length from the coccyx to the head, to the width from the base of the neck through each arm, you can, of course, bring the elbow and the knee towards each other. And you keep imagining the place that they would touch, even if they don't touch. So as the lines of the length of the legs bend, the length of the spine curves and turns, you continue to have a sense or an image of width from the base of the neck wide through the shoulders, even as arms act. And then again, you can pause a moment with your knees bent so the feet are on the floor, or perhaps even lengthen out your legs. So in the listening to breath that
may appear, the movement of breath that appears in the lower belly, is that it's a bit more dimensional now. And when you listen to this expansion in the lower belly, see, an image is wonderful unless it begins to limit you. So that means that if you have the sense of a balloon that expands in that lower belly, and then you become extraordinary, literal, and fixed about that, then your brain will take you very seriously, and the breath won't be able to expand and enlarge and maybe go somehow begin to engage the small ribs in the back and the wide ribs at the breasts, and it'll become like a lower belly balloon thing, and only a lower belly balloon thing, right? Rather than an image that is temporarily useful and then is transforms in yourself when it makes sense to you. And lastly, or maybe lastly, one time before lastly, can you bend your knees and the width of the mouth and the length of the spine? And it's repetitive and hopefully deepening. And bring your the right hand behind your head, and the right knee towards your chest, and maybe it's possible to maintain these directions in the listening to the breath, and the movement can actually become perhaps a bit less slow. And imagine for, just like we did on the other side, just imagine first this exactly where will the elbow and the knee touch. How you'll sense it in the elbow, how you'll sense it in the knee, and the length of the spine. And then when the image is really clear, really clear. And by the way, the length of the left leg from the sacrum, a little bit to the hip joint, from the hip joint to the knee, from the knee to the heel. Listening to the one line which is not called to action. How does that listening to that line, the leg that's not moving, does that facilitate the other lines, perhaps? Yeah, and then just find out whether clarifying the image actually does influence the movement even more. And then I think the other thing to do is to keep your hand behind your head. I'm losing track a little bit. And it doesn't really matter, because it's not about the movement, it's about the attention. But you can eventually bend, put the right foot on the floor, and listen if the two legs can maintain their length, even though they're bent, and one, the right one goes to the floor and the left foot lifts from the floor. So that you imagine first, again, this really, really precise place where you will feel the touching, if there were to be a touch between the specific place on the knee and a specific place on the elbow. And the mouth, what happens to the mouth? You know, a lot of determination can be caught out in the tongue and the mouth. Not to mention the fact that there's cervical vertebra in the back of the throat, so you press the tongue and do something with the lips and jaw, and you've diminished the potential places of lifting your head lightly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you can rest with your knees bent, you can rest with your legs long, but and truly, lastly, listening to, or actually it's not listening to, well, it's listening to the breath. So that's a listening, right? That, but the lines are your creation. You're going to continue breathing whether you generate it or not. That's kind of a merciful given, huh? I don't know how effectively, but anyway, but we do continue breathing. But the lines are really a creation. So create the lines of attention, of direction through the mouth, the direction of width, and to the extent that all that can be in the foreground, bend your knees. And this then bring both hands behind your head. It's really amazing, you know, to be bringing the arms upward and really listening at the base of the neck. It just does great stuff. Bring your elbows forward from the floor. And totally in thinking for now, attend to some place on the left elbow and the right elbow, both elbows. And in thinking, you imagine that you lift your head and both knees, and the two elbows, you want to really feel where, what the sensation will be in the elbows when you touch the knees. So do you have to think about the knees to feel the sensation in the elbows, or do you just think about the elbows? I don't know how we do these things. Pretty wild. So just do it in imagining, right? Just an image. And then where will you feel it in, where will it feel like in the knees when the knees touch the elbows? And then all four points, all four contact points. And then, again, only to the extent that you can keep generating the lines and keep listening to the breath, actually lift the knees, lift the head, and see how close or how far from the image the action actually is, right? There's so many places where the image can be cuckoo and therefore the action has no chance. And then the image can be great, but the ability to sort out how to organize it could be not really clear, so. So is it the ability to, as he says, perform this action that's not clear, or the image was not clear? Maybe we don't know which it is yet, but and then as you bring yourself back to the floor, can you maintain the listening to the belly, the lines, and rest finally on the floor and find what is interesting for you to notice about yourself now. Do you feel an urge? Is it curious to compare the changes from how you were before, or are you just listening to yourself now? It's not really that relevant what you listened to before.
No.
Maybe a blend of the two. And eventually, as always, you will come to standing, and it's completely really up to you how much further you carry that experiment of listening primarily to the breath forming itself in the inhalation and then the exhalation forming itself. Totally up to you whether you keep that in the foreground or whether you want to maintain this generating of the lengths through the spine and the legs and the width through the shoulders and the arms as you get up and stand and walk around. It's really up to you, but I think it's really, really a nice thing at some point to go, okay, this is it, now I'm going back on social self or automatic pilot or whatever, just to know when that choice is made.